You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Brandon McMullen, the former girls basketball coach at Burns High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us and just chat about high school hoops and a little bit about you. Let's start with you, Coach. Can you give me a little bit of background knowledge and on you, your kind of basketball background, and how you got into coaching and how you ended up as the head girls coach at Burns?
So I have been coaching high school ball for 15 years, give or take, and I didn't really catch the bug until, well, I guess it was early on. So I grew up in Clarkston, Washington, and during high school, loved playing ball, of course, I think it was the summer before my senior year in high school, and we had a little kids camp. And I love being a part of little kids camp as a player, as a high school kid. I think that year I had the opportunity to coach a small group all week long. It was a week long camp, a small group of probably fifth or sixth grade, boys. And throughout that week, that's all I could think about. You know, and it just kind of overtook me. It's like, this is an amazing feeling, you know, even maybe more so than playing. I love playing. There's nothing better than playing the game, of course. But maybe a close second, if not more, is coaching. And that's kind of where I got my itch. I never really had the opportunity after that to really jump into it. I took some coaching courses when I went to Lewis Clark State. And then I was going to be a teacher, and I reversed course academically and became a land use planner of all things. But my route to going back to the game and, you know, kind of getting back into my way of teaching, I suppose, and which is what I always wanted to be coaching, I guess, came when my mother-in-law, when I was in college, said, "Hey, I know Burns, Oregon may not be at the top of your list, but I know you want to coach. And there's a boys freshman job opportunity." And, you know, my wife and I at the time were almost out of school. And she said, you know, that there's potentially a job waiting for her. So maybe there's something that would work for you. And lo and behold, I applied for a couple and received phone calls right back on those. Went down in the middle of a week to Burns, Oregon, where my wife is from, by the way, and interviewed for the job. It went well. And then I was more nervous right after that to go talk to the boys' head coach at the high school than I was for the job, the position. Mm-hmm. And just thinking, you know, I don't know anything, and I'm borderline intimidated by the opportunity. And so I walked into the high school office. My mother-in-law worked at the time as the athletic secretary for the high school. So she had the in, you know. And she said, you know what? Big old smile on her face. Just hold up here. I think he's going to walk by pretty soon. And maybe we can talk about whatever interview he wants to do. And I could feel the, you know, my body clenching up a little bit, like, oh man, this is my opportunity, maybe, you know. And I see him in the hallway, and he's pacing up and down, and I introduce myself. Hey, I'm Brandon. I'm Dana's son-in-law. And he looks me up and down and goes, "Are you the one who's interested in the freshman position?" I go, "Very much." He said, and he pauses. This is very Eric Nichols, and he looks at me and he goes, "What do you know?" And I remember thinking, my first reaction was, I don't know anything. I just want to come. And he looked at me and he stared for a second and goes, "That's the perfect answer. If you take the job, you're hired." I go, perfect. So I ended up, long story short, taking it. And I loved it. I coached, I was the boys freshman coach, did a little bit of varsity assistant work too, but mostly the boys freshman coach for 4 years under Eric Nichols here at the high school. And then Alice Haroff in the girls program over here, a legendary coach, great coach, she retired, I believe sometime in 2009, something. And her JV coach, Jake Thompson, asked me if I'd be interested in being a girls coach, a JV girls coach. And it took me a little while because I'd never thought about it. I watched their program. They did some amazing things with the girls. They're very successful. I just didn't picture myself there. I pictured myself coaching guys. And it took me about a day or two, and I looked at my potential path of progressing at the high school in the boys program, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. It sounds exciting. I don't know anything about coaching girls, but fuck, do it. And I coached under Jake for 3 years, and it was a huge eye-opener. Just coaching basketball is coaching basketball. And Jake resigned 3 years after. I put my name in the hat because I knew this was the opportunity that I probably needed to take advantage of. And 8 years later, after that, and a pretty decent run, I called myself the head coach for a little while. It was fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I want to go back to, you talked about taking some coaching courses in college. Did you implement anything you learned from those coaching courses into your coaching career?
Interestingly enough, not a whole lot. You know, I know that's a strange answer, but I will tell you the one thing the course that I remember the most was actually put on by the head volleyball coach at Lewis Clark State at the time. I think his first name was Kip. Great coach for, I don't know a darn thing about volleyball, but he was highly respected in his realm, right? And I remember being in that class and being surrounded by his kids, by his volleyball players. I'm like, what is this? There were like two dudes on the baseball team there. I'm like, where am I right now? Like, maybe this is a pipe dream. Like maybe I'm out of my element. And so I remember, you know, taking part in that. And what I did learn, what I did kind of pull from that, was the importance of baking preparation as a part of your program's growth. A preparation mindset, the importance of preparation, is underrated. And you should always take that with you into the next day. Like, this is what we're working towards. And it sounds like a simple concept, but has proven to be one of the anchors of the program that I happen to be in charge of for the last 8 years.
Yeah. You also talked about, you know, switching from boys to girls. And so I did the same thing, except the other way. Started with the girl coaching girls and then ended up coaching boys. And the question I always get asked and that I'll ask you is, what were some of the biggest differences and what was that adjustment like?
Well, so as far as basketball goes, it goes without saying, you know, guys physically can do a little bit more. And the game is played above the rim, right, to a certain extent, depending on which guy's team you're playing, right?
Right,
your coaching. But for girls basketball, you know, the main concepts basketball-wise are largely the same. And, in fact, that's When I approached taking the position, that was one of the core beliefs I had. You know, and I remember interviewing for the position, saying, "Hey, I'm going to coach this team like I did the guys, because to me they're all ball players." You know, but I will tell you this: and tons of lessons learned on the coaching front from my first year. Like, I look back at that first year and go, "What a train wreck." On my part, you know, just, oh my gosh, you know. But one of the things I knew I had to establish as quickly as I could after the first 2 to 3 years was I needed to have a woman on staff. I needed to have a female presence, most likely a former player, you know, in our program. And I can't tell you how important it was to have that perspective in the coaching circle. All right. So if I've got a former player, a former Lady Highlander, right, or who's ever played in our program, they have a sense of how things have been picked up or not. They also have maybe a sense of some things that a middle-aged old guy may not pick up on right away. And that's super important. I think if I would have kept on going with just two old guys saying, why can't we punch through that next level where we think we can go? I think a large part of us progressing was maybe making sure I had someone on staff that could look me back in the eye and go, hey, they're not picking up what you're putting down, or you're not seeing the complete picture. And those differences are key, for certain.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, you start kind of looking back. You talked about the first job you took as a freshman coach, and Coach Nichols asked you, what do you know? And you said nothing. And you think about where you are now. How have you kind of developed, do you think, as a coach? And maybe what advice would you give to your younger self?
So you take your experiences with you, right? Of course you do. So when you're first starting off at coaching, you carry with you not just as a player, but you know, how were you coached? You know, what kind of things really grabbed your attention, you thought were super effective, and you bring those with you initially, and you say, okay, this is a drill, or this is a concept that's super important. One of those core principles, right, is that, of course, you need a solid foundation of fundamentals, you know, ball handling, shooting, passing, all those things. And they are super important. But the last part of learning how to be a basketball player is one that I think I didn't quite get the grasp of until I went to a number of coaching clinics and talked to a number of coaches and really found out that, you know, the best way to develop as a ball player is to play basketball. You know, so you could see in my first year, especially, we'd spend two thirds doing fundamental stuff. And my kids were great at dribbling at cones, great practice players. You know, they could handle the ball, do a bunch of finishing stuff. Man, they were crisp passers, no defense. Right. And those things were great in practice. But the missing piece that I started throwing in about year three was this idea that I needed to start throwing in more small-sided games. And that's a, you know, it's a term thrown around a lot right now in the last 5 years or so. But I didn't know it, you know, at that point. It's just playing ball, you know. So you're simulating different elements of your offense or your offensive action or things you want to funnel them into so that they start making reads with all the fundamental stuff that you do. So when I was a younger coach, if I had to go back and in the time machine and go talk to year one Brandon, I'd say, hey, these drills that you saw on YouTube were great. They're really fun. All those notes that you picked up at the Oregon Coaches Association stuff, those are really great, but you don't have to use all of it. Mm-hmm. Use the stuff that makes sense to you. More importantly, what makes sense to your program and your personnel and your kids. And then start playing a little bit more two-on-two and three-on-three within the actions that you implement in your offensive structure. You know, and your players will start developing. So if I had that a year ahead, man, I don't know if we're winning any state titles any sooner, but I can tell you, I think we'd got a lot better a lot faster.
What do you hope your players will be able to know and do after leaving your program? And how do you ensure that they're going to meet those standards?
Well, so, you know, the follow-up is always the challenge, right? But, you know, because as soon as they leave the doors of the high school, you do your best to check in with them and make sure they're doing well and that you support them and all those things. And you want to make sure that you're staying in touch just because those relationships are not only important to maintain, but they're fun, you know, and all those things. But while they're in the doors or inside the gym, they haven't left the program yet. I hope that they take with them a couple things. One is how to effectively be a goal setter. Now, I can touch on this later, but one of the things that we do twice per year, or we didn't get a chance to this last year, especially the way we wanted to. We kept talking about it, but COVID ruined a lot of things. but in a normal circumstance, our summer program would have one large key element to it, and that would be our coaching staff would have one-on-one meetings with all of our player personnel, whether it was an incoming freshman or a four-year starter. We would sit down and talk about goals, but more pointedly, goal setting. And the part that's super important of all of that is different small goals to get to, the bigger one, of course, but something that's measurable. And if, you know, I mean, anyone can point at a wall and go, hey, I want to be Michael Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. But how do I get to intermediate steps, and why is that important? And then how do I measure success when I do that? So we'd sit down and talk about that structure. We felt, anyways, was important for our players all the way through. You know, at what level do you want to, what role do you see yourself when you're a freshman as an upperclassman? You know, what's your skill set? How do we build that stuff, you know? And then the other thing is, and you've probably heard enough of this stuff having conversations with coaches, but, and it is kind of, I don't think it's cliche to say this, but, you know, be a star in your role in life, right? So if you, you know, one of the great things about team sports, it can be crushing at times, right? But one of the great things of team sports is that not all of us are meant to be a certain thing on that lineup. We should be thinking about, okay, what role have I fit into and why? And you know what? I'm going to take that. I'm going to run with it. I'm going to own it. Now, developing a sense of ownership is not easy. It's not easy to convey the importance of to your players, and sometimes it doesn't come naturally to athletes. But if they've got a decent sense of that after leaving the program, I feel pretty good about it. You know, I think that if they can walk out and be like, you know what, I wasn't the highest scoring kid, but man, I was probably one of the better rebounders coming off the bench. I played 2 to 3 minutes of ball game, and that was awesome. That's what I did. When I went in, it wasn't a letdown. I produced. And that's what I studied at that. I owned that. Like, that was my thing. Ball wasn't turned over when it was in my hands in the backcourt. Right? Like, this is what, so as you take that, you know, can that translate into your professional life? Sure. I think it can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that goes back to the old adage, I think. Is that, you know, again, I don't know if it's cliche or not, but, you know, if you're going to go, whatever you do in life, whether you're going to be a CEO or a garbage worker or a postal worker, be the best darn postal worker, garbage man or woman, CEO out there, right? It's the same.
Absolutely.
If that's your role, then go just get into it and be the best you can at whatever that is. And it seems to fall a lot in line with what you're saying. So,
For sure. You know, I coached a girl. She was a senior. She, of course, right? But we went through goal setting and we sat down and we were honest with each other. Cause I think that's super important in the summertime. And then we would have a follow up, by the way, to that meeting in December.
Mm-hmm.
And, I met with her and said, okay, I want to see your team binder, right? And let's talk about where we were in the summertime as opposed to where we are now and what the rest of the season, you know, may plot out for you. I remember meeting with this particular athlete, and part of the coach-player relationship, again, is being upfront. And so not only do I want to hear what she thinks her, you know, position or role or what have you, her space in this program is. But I'm gonna shoot it straight with the athlete too. And I remember telling her, hey, you know, I'm not gonna say her name, but let's say her name was Jenna, right? It's not Jenna, but let's say it was Jenna.
Right.
And I said, Jenna, you know, given the skill set and where you're at and our lineup depth, especially your position, we may be looking at anywhere from no play to 2 to 3 minutes ball game, depending on the circumstances. And I need you to know what you've brought to this program is super important, right? And it hasn't necessarily been basketball related. It's been teammate related and organizational related and leadership related, you know, and I gave her a number of examples. And then I told her, I've met with many athletes in this very position, having this very conversation with me. And I don't give them an ultimatum, but I give them that choice. So, okay, so the ball's in your court. We're going to leave this conversation. Here's the ball, proverbially put in your court, right? Mm-hmm. And you can make a choice at this moment. You can be that player who now knows where they're going to be and may just fold up their tent and not contribute in the best way possible, right? Like, you know what? Coach told me I'm not even going to play. I want to hang out with my buddies, and I want to be a part of this, but I'm going to check out. I'm not going to be that player. Or you can own it and you can be the best teammate on the floor. You can be the best cheerleader for our program that you possibly can be. And she made obviously the second choice, you know, because we're telling that story. But I remember we lost in the first round that year on the road. And I remember, we were done with the kids in the locker room and we were shaking hands with parents and stuff as they took their kids home. And I walked up to her father at the end of that. And I said, I can't tell you how proud of your daughter I am. And he kind of looked at me funny. I said, I gave him the story. And he almost had a tear go down his eye. And it wasn't because she scored the most points or had the most whatever. It was because she owned that role. And he knew how hard that would be, how difficult that challenge would be as a player. And as a teammate. And I think at that moment, you know, I mean, you're just struck with, you know what, she's going to take that. And she's going to use that experience to her advantage, maybe for the rest of her life. You know, so, yeah, I love those kind of stories. And it doesn't always work that way, of course. It takes a strong personality to do it. But it can happen.
Good stuff, Coach. We're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach McMullen right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Brandon McMullen. Coach, I want to talk about, you had a lot of success in your run as the head coach with the girls at Burns. I'm curious, what is a reason you think you were able to not only be successful once, but consistently, year in and year out, competing for playoffs and state titles?
I think it's a combination of being lucky enough to have pretty dedicated athletes that also happen to be maybe more of your skilled players, right? You always want that combination if you can, right? You can have the most skilled or talented kid on the floor, but if they don't buy in, if they don't believe in what you're doing, oftentimes you're going to underachieve. I think that kind of goes without saying. But through those 8 years, give or take, I, as many coaches have said, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I think I was able to maybe work with some very dedicated kids. Now, of course, that takes a process and phone calls and buy-in. And it takes more than a gym rat. It helps a lot. But once you have that established, the teammates around them, they'll fight for you. They'll fight for these talented players, but they fight for each other so much more when your highest output kids happen to be some of your best kids as people. And I think that's a big part of it. If you want to look at the 8 years, man, I can think of more than a handful of kids that I could point at and go, that was largely on the quality of person that you turned out to be. And, you get pretty proud of that because, you played some small role. But that's it. I don't know if there's a super secret sauce that I can convey besides the fact that you want to be consistent and have and really show that you care. You want to make sure you're competitive and you're tough-minded, but at the same time, your players need to know that you have their back, And so that balance is super important, and I think that's maybe one big reason we saw a little bit of success over the last 8 years.
Yeah. I'm curious, and maybe you did have a scenario like this, but I think sometimes, especially I would say in a smaller town like Burns, right, where I would say your best athletes are often your best athletes from the time they were younger all the way to they were older, and they kind of know they're the best athlete, right? They know they're the best one out there. They step out on the floor. They're the best basketball player. So, you talked about you want your best player to be one of your harder workers. I'm curious if there's anything that you felt like you did that really helped create that buy-in from some of your better players.
I think if you can look at the things that we did, there wasn't a magic secret sauce, I suppose, but it was, it's funny that you bring up small town stuff because a lot of times one of the neat parts about being an isolated town in Eastern Oregon, I suppose, is these kids grow up next to each other. They're not coming from different schools. They're not necessarily kids who transfer in the last moment and complement the group. These kids play travel ball together when they're in the fifth and sixth grade. They play other sports together, And if you can foster that, and then have that grow and branch off into friendships that can develop on the floor with other kids they'd normally not maybe associate themselves with, right? I think that just really helps. Relationships. And it's not just coach the player. In fact, I think that's an important part, but it's not the most important. How are they glued together on and off the floor during the basketball season? You can tell a lot from your team gatherings and how what their body language looks like. But I think that plays a huge key role in this stuff is them knowing that you care and showing them and you're invested, and then almost that they demand that of themselves. And they fight hard for each other.
If I were to come watch a practice, what would I see? What would I hear? What would I feel? What would that look like?
So this last year was different. And I tell you, it was, I unfortunately, because of the limited amount of time, practice time that we had in between games. We had a week last season where we had, I think we had 5 games in 6 days, you know. Mm-hmm. There's just that's everyone experienced that. Totally understand.
Right.
But in a normal circumstance, what you'd see is kids walking by the practice plan, finding out and they could have smiles or frowns for sure, but walking by a practice plan that's posted by the double doors as they walk in the gym. So that they know, again, a big piece of what I learned early on and I hope to instill in our program is preparation, right? We're going to make the most efficient use of our time if you know what's coming and you get right after it. And if I don't have to lead you by the hand to every single drill, we're going to get through this more efficiently and we're going to be better for it. So the first thing you'd see, hopefully, are our kids walking by, taking a look at that practice plan, going, okay, I know I need to be prepared for this, or I'm going to do really well at this, or, you know, they're going to think to themselves about 2 or 3 things on that practice plan, good, bad, or indifferent. That's what they do. And then they're ready to go. Our first 10 minutes are position work or individual work, depending on what day of the week it is. But we'll you know, these last couple of years have been a little different, but in the past we had a little bit more balance in our roster depth as far as position, and we did some different things offensively. So we'd have our front court players with two of our coaching staff on one side and our back court players on the other, and I would float between the two. And I left the first 10 minutes to 15 minutes organized completely for them. So if you were to walk in 2 or 3 years ago, you'd see our posts doing individual post work or going to a particular drill we knew we had to work on as a part of our offense, a skill set that we had to do with our post coach, with our front court coaches, and then our guards coaches, our back court coaches would be working on all the different things that we'd like to see or work on that week to prepare for our matchups as we got there. And so you'd see almost two different, and everyone's talking over each other, and that's good. I want a loud gym because that's the atmosphere we play in. But you'd see a lot of commotion going on from both sides of the floor, if not all baskets being used, and they'd be, it looked like chaos, but it'd be looking like organized chaos. But before any of that stuff happens, they need to get on the floor as fast as they can. Before that 10 minutes, make sure they're all geared up and they're all hovering around a basket or a side basket doing what we call a Swiss drill, which is just basic shooting mechanics. They get 1 foot from the basket. I'm sure you know what Swiss drill is, Coach, right? You're getting 1 foot from the basket. And it's all basic form shooting, right? And what's neat about that is that when they're incoming freshmen and you see them do that, because it's baked in from the time they were at our little kids camp in the summertime to all throughout middle school. You get a little puffed in the chest because you're like, you know what? There's continuity there that is really kind of neat. Kids know they come in, they don't know what they're doing, and they may be pretty nervous. Heck, it may be even the first week and it's tryouts, but they come in as freshmen and they line up next to the basket and they immediately go into form shooting. They know that that's the first thing that they should be doing from the time they were fifth, sixth, maybe even fourth graders. And that's a really neat thing, you know. But from there on out, it just depends on the time of the year. But you'll hear a loud gym, and then you'll hear us getting after it, trying to instill physicality in our finishing stuff. So, but that's what you should see. You should see two sides of the floor. Now, the last 2 years have been a little different. Our roster's been composed of an incredible backcourt, and our depth in the frontcourt was a lot different. So we did some different things where we do a lot of stationary ball handling to start, just to get our handles going, but we're very much backcourt centric. So we'd spend a lot of our first amount of time working on fundamentals and finishing and things like that, through contact drills and combination drills, very specific to what we did offensively, you know. And yeah, kids just getting right after it. It's all led by our upperclassmen. And so I could, not that I'd ever walk in late, but every once in a while I could be on the phone. I don't work at the high school, so sometimes I have to bring work with me. And I'd be on the phone while our kids are starting the first part of practice. And if I've got one assistant coach taping an athlete and another one who happens to maybe not make it on time to practice, they have to be self-starters. So our upperclassmen would be the ones who was like, all right, this is what we normally do. There's a practice plan. Let's go. And do you know who I'll tell you a little quick story. You know who Greg Mulkey is, the athletic director?
I do. I do,
Love that guy, by the way. Mm-hmm. And he helps create a fantastic state playoff atmosphere over in Coos Bay. But the first time we went back to Coos Bay years ago, we got in super late. Like there was like an avalanche over the pass. And we didn't get to the opening ceremony until it was halfway over. But we still ended up practicing that night. It was like midnight. We still ended up practicing that night. And Greg gets us into this old gym, this neat old gym over at, I think it was at North Bend. And he lets us in, and our kids start going to work. They start gearing up. And he's kind of looking at my kids, you know, and then he's pacing back and forth. And he comes over, he goes, I bet I know which one your leader is. I bet I know which one your point guard is. I go, oh, yeah, which one, Greg? Let's see, you know. And he points right at my point guard. And it was without a beat. I'm like, it's funny how you can tell, isn't it? You know, and she's getting them all going. She knows we're tired. She knows that there's a lot on stake. And she's getting geared up. She's got her serious face on. She's doing her own stretching, and she's ready to go. And by example, she's told everyone in that gym we're about business at midnight. And those are some, you know, those are fun memories. And I just remember Greg going, oh, yeah, that's your kid, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. How do you know if you've had a good practice or a game? Is there any either statistics or analytics that you use to kind of set and meet certain goals?
Well, so as far as practices go, I don't like to play with numbers too much. I think that if we've been – I've always been more concerned with how we're using our time. With that short window of time we have the kids every day, are we using it the most efficiently? And that's mostly on me. It's nothing to do with the kids, you know. But especially by the time we're midway through league, I should know what we have and what we need to be working on. And, you know, you always get a curveball here and there. But and you got to be flexible as a coach. But, you know, that – whether we've been successful in practice is, I think, whether or not we've utilized we've done good time management. You're not always going to get an A+, but when I walk out of a practice going, you know what, we got in what we needed to, I think we understood it, and I feel better about being prepared. If you feel the kids are confident, and they're walking out of the gym, shaking their heads yes up and down, and they're feeling good about it, and they're seeing success, you feel it, you know. But I think part of that for me came from making sure we were well organized and the kids felt confidence in that too. And I think that carries over. As far as the game goes, the two stats that always were looked at were the other team's offensive rebounds and what our shot chart and their shot chart looked like. The other stuff is important too, and those aren't analytics, it's just stats, right? But for us, we would put so much emphasis on that, if you will, Belichickian type of preparation where you're trying to take away what the other team does really well, right? Take away their best stuff and then force them into other decisions. So we'd spend all week doing that, and we'd see success when we would – force them into a shot that we wanted them to take, or a lower percentage shot. Let's say it's a contested mid-range, just to be general, right? Where the rebounds would really get you is if you saw that high number of offensive rebounds on that side, because obviously that means they're getting second chance. You know, and we're not going to win on a consistent rate, especially in these super competitive games, if we're giving up second chances after we put in the work. We spent too much time together preparing to take away their best stuff only to give them a second or a third chance. And that would always be a part of what we talked about. You can't give them second chances. And were we always A-plus in that effort? No, but that was always a big indicator for us, right?
Right.
And we'd walk into halftime where we're down, you know, or we're in a tight ball game. And I'd walk in after talking to the coaches before, just to collect our thoughts, right? And we'd walk in and talk to the kids, and they're talking about rebounds, always talking about their rebounds, sometimes ours, but theirs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our teams have always liked to transition, so I could always feed them this, and it kind of goes without saying, hey, if you guys want to run, you got to get stopped. You got to get bored. Mm-hmm. And that's how you play it fast and fun. And so that means we've got to spend a lot of time on the defensive end. And if they're getting second and third chances, that's going to deflate you. So they'd always have that in the back of their head. We've got to stop second chances. If they hit a shot, they hit a shot, right? If it's a good, if teams score points, it's basketball. But if we can limit them in that category, we're going to find success. And the other one's shot chart, and I think that kind of goes without saying, if you look at halftime and you're pulling up from locations or taking shots that you don't normally do, or even what your counteractions would give you and counter reads, it's like, hey, we got to make some adjustments. That's a simple telltale sign. It's not new or revolutionary to say that, but boy, does it help you win games when you look at a shot chart and go, okay, we're not getting shots where we need to be, where we find success. Here's where we can go, you know, and then vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at their shot chart, it's like, well, what have we been trying to force? You know, so I have tried to have someone take those two stats for us constantly. And it's been a big indicator for us on where we're measuring success in ball games.
I want to talk about, you know, Burns is pretty isolated out in Eastern Oregon, and you guys do quite a bit of traveling, as you mentioned, for the state tournament. You get to go all the way over to Coos Bay. So you guys are on the road quite a bit. How do you manage that with your girls, and do you utilize that time in any particular way to maybe turn it a disadvantage into an advantage?
You know, we talk about these long trips every once in a while, and we do it the night before we travel, right? We, in our final huddle and practice, I try to get them in a spot where they can visualize what the game's going to be like, but I also include the travel. And travel for us, you know, that there's a lot of different ways you can peel this onion, of course, for travel time, and we've got a bunch of it. Everything's at least two hours from us, right?
Right.
But, you know, and I've heard a lot of coaches take the angle, hey, I want them communicating. I'm going to take their cell phones away. Or I'm going to give them puzzles and team-building exercises. I've never jumped on that. And the reason is we when we're together, we're serious. When we're on the floor, we're there to get to work. We're there to be competitive. We want to win, and so we're very passionate and competitive about that. But when we're on the bus, I want them to relax. I want them to think about things. I mean, they can talk to each other. They can spend that time basically however they want, to be honest with you, as long as they're not being obnoxious, right? But, you know, it's time for them to do either self-reflection or to rest. Now, I'll get them up a little bit before we get to our destination. So if we're, you know, within a half an hour or something, it's like, hey, time to wake up, time to get our bodies moving. We haven't always done the best job of that, just in full disclosure. But that downtime is important. You know, kids have, especially kids that are trying to be super successful, they've got a lot going on. Basketball is the most important thing at that moment. But they've got a lot of different irons in the fire, right? So if you need to study, study. You need to get some homework done, okay. You know, you need to talk with your friend, that's okay. You know, that's also time for us to talk to continue our coach-player conversations. I'm not, you know, now that I'm maybe not in the middle of season, I can tell you we move around the bus a lot as coaches and we're talking to players. So that's because we have 2 hours at least, sometimes a lot more than that, I get to talk to a lot of players. And sometimes that turns into I go to one of our upperclassmen or one of our leaders and I say, hey, how do you feel about our game plan? Is there anything you're confused about? You know, is there anything you feel really confident about? How's player A doing? How's she feeling about this? You know, just trying to gauge where we're at from the outside. And usually you get some with that one-on-one stuff after they've been on the bus for a while. They're more than ready to talk to you, you know. And then after that conversation's done, you kind of look around the bus a little bit and you'll see them go talk to some of those players. Right? Like, hey, and every once in a while I get, coach, throw me the whiteboard.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know? And that's like, oh, you bet. Oh, sure, pass this down. I may not see it for 2 hours. Kid you not. Mm-hmm. And I love it. You know, I couldn't wait to give up the dry erase board for them to start talking about things they're looking forward to doing and things they need to prepare for and questions they had. And they'd figure that stuff out on their own. So in a sense, yeah, it's a long ways to drive from point A to point B in the Eastern Oregon League, especially from Burns. But we tried to use it for our advantage in multiple ways.
Yeah. Because of the, you know, game plan, I'm kind of curious as what your, you know, game prep, game plan looks like for upcoming opponents. Do you spend – how much time do you spend worried about you and making sure your kids are becoming better at running your stuff? And how much time do you spend, you know, preparing to take away your opponent's best stuff?
That's a really good question. And you know, I've thought about, and this has changed and morphed over years, but, and it really also depends on, you know, the variables for everything. It also depends on the experience of your group. But in, let's say it's generally, if we're at the beginning of the year, through the months of November and, of course, December, we're not spending an incredible amount of time doing game prep. It's about us, things we need to do to get better. I'm not saying we don't get in the film room and watch and stuff or we don't look at scouting reports. But the main emphasis is what do we do and how do we do it really, really well? You know, that as when years ago when the ranking system changed through rating and you really have to start thinking about winning those games early on, things changed a little bit in that category. But years ago, we used to say, you know, it's just preseason.
Right.
You know?
Right.
We'd go out and we'd play as tough a schedule as we could. And it really, you know what? The coaches' polls were something, but it really didn't matter. The important part was trying to win your league. And so you could drop some games and make sure you focused on you. I think that changed a little bit for good, bad, or you know, maybe something else when it came to the rating systems. And believe me, I'm all about it. I think it's a good thing. But it surely changed how early in the year we would start maybe progressing faster into, hey, okay, let's start talking about why we're looking at scouting reports. Let's break down who we've got over, you know, who our next three opponents are. And that can be kind of tough, especially that time of year, where you've got 4 games and 3 days to practice for them. So that's another, you know, that's another challenge that you face sometimes. But, you know, we all have that, I suppose. When we get into league, our focus changes dramatically in midway through January and throughout until we hopefully get to the playoffs. And I would say a third of what we do is things that get us better as basketball players and more about preparing in the limited window of time that we have with the kids for a rigorous league schedule. You know, what's the priority? Well, the priority at the beginning was to make sure we became better basketball players and a better basketball team. Now, priority is to try and win a league, right? There's no state without league. So And the kids knew that, and they knew early on that was always going to be the emphasis. So if you drop the game, it is what it is. But when we got to the league, things changed. So we would have, you know, let's say it's a typical week in league. You could have kids show up at practice with a scattering report ready to go for a league game on Tuesday. I kid you not. And we would go through player tendencies. We'd talk about their first six or seven kids or so. And then we'd talk about things they do generally. And we'd do this on the floor if we had to have a quick turnaround without film sometimes. And you have no choice. You know, you don't practice on Sundays, or at least we don't, right? So in order to get that quick turnaround, you have to emphasize certain things. You got to do a lot in a little amount of time. But then you have the challenge of playing Friday, Saturday, back-to-back, on practice days from Wednesday and Thursday. So you have 2 days to prepare for two teams. And they could be drastically different teams that you're preparing for. So, yeah, you know, your practice format and your emphasis for us anyways changed from building things that we do into refining what we do for about a third of practice or less, and then preparing towards adjustments we need to make offensively and how we're going to take away what they want to do.
You talked about scouting reports, so I'm assuming you still hand them a physical report. Is that correct? Or do you do any film study with them, or what is that? What do you give your players?
Sure. You know, kids can get overwhelmed. Players can get overwhelmed with a lot of information. So we try and keep our scouting report to 2 pages at most. You may get a sheet of diagrams that they can refer to, absolutely. And we'll go through most of that stuff on the floor. Just trying to make sure they're prepared. You're showing them your investment so that they can make a return on that, right? So up front, our scouting reports are going to have those things that I mentioned earlier. It's going to have, okay, here's their projected starting lineup. Here's how they're successful in what they do, their strengths and weaknesses. And if we're playing, you know, if we're matched up and man, who's, you know, what our initial thoughts on defensive positions are going to be, matchups and whatnot. And then we'll walk through generally the concepts of what they want to do offensively and what our plan of attack is to take that stuff away. Then we'll jump into film. And so, you know, you probably have a lot of coaches that talk about how great the advent of huddle is, and it absolutely is. You know, the days of us having to be like, hey, listen, I've got to go drive halfway across the state. I got to meet a coach in Bend 2.5 hours from here tonight. Coach, you've got practice, so I can go trade tape, right, with Coach Smith from wherever, right? And, you know, those days are gone. I haven't had to do that in more than a handful of years. And that's so, you know, you talk to the importance of getting to know coaches and establishing relationships there. I mean, that's huge, because then you can reach out to them and almost instantaneously I can get film from coaches. And so I, you know, use that to our advantage, and we'd have, again, you don't want to overload them. Film session based on our scouting report and back and forth would probably last at most 45 minutes prior to our practice. And that's when we tried to do it. I don't, you know, we'd have film and stuff after practice, and that can also be effective. I'm not sure which one's better, but if you can get kids after school, and here's a little trick, feed them. Bring snacks. I'm kidding, you know. You know, if they have school all day, and then we have film for 45 minutes, and then we got to try and take what we learned in film session and try and translate that to stuff on the court. You've got to have food. You've got to have energy in them. And I learned that the hard way. I borderline get super frustrated with kids that were nodding off in film. You know, I'm like, gosh, I'm trying to be engaging here. Like, what's going on? And I remember it's probably my second or third year in, and I talked to one of my kids, you know, at the time. I was like, hey, I'm just being honest. How do I get so-and-so more engaged? Or how do I, you know, it's like, coach, we're tired. Okay. Like, we just need some energy. Now, some of us bring snacks. Some of us don't. I'm like, okay, how can I help? I know this sounds very, you know, park and rec, but bring some snacks to film.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, they were looking forward to it. I told them all about it. Like, hey, listen, I'm going to be bringing these kind of protein snacks. We're going to be bringing some fruit. We're going to be doing this stuff. We're going to get into it. And they're like, okay, all right. And they were engaged, man. If they can consume both physically, right, and mentally, you're in it. And so that was, if there is secret sauce there, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Bring back the orange slices, baby. Bring them back.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach McMullen will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, save the date. The 2021 OACA OBCA Nike Basketball Coach of the Year Clinic will be held Friday, October 8th at Liberty High School. Also, plan to join us for the second annual OBCA Golf Tournament Saturday, October 9th at the OGA Golf Course in Woodburn. You can find more information at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Brandon McMullen, the former girls basketball coach at Burns High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer and ask you some rapid-fire questions that should only have 1 to 2 word answers. And we're going to get through as many as we can in 35 seconds. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. We have 35 seconds on the timer. We are starting now. Should Oregon High School basketball have a shot clock?
Oh, yes.
Should it be implemented at the sub-varsity levels?
Yes. If you're going to do it at the high school level or if you're going to do it at the varsity level, have to do it at the JV level.
You're up 3 with less than 10 seconds. Do you foul?
No.
What's your favorite way to guard our on-ball screen?
Down or ice, depending on what your terminology is.
Do you think the three-point line should be moved back in high school?
No, I think it's fine just where it is.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
You know what? Black coffee.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Passionate.
Boom. There it is. Good work, Coach.
Yeah.
Good work. Well done. Well done. Good possession. Coach, I want to have you elaborate a little bit on your shot clock answer, just because it's something that's potentially coming to Oregon with the recent NFHS ruling that allows states to option in to using a shot clock. You mentioned you were in favor. Can you elaborate on why?
You know, we as coaches, we often hear, and hopefully a lot of us are thinking the same thing, and we're all in the same boat, but we need to grow the game. The game needs to evolve, you know, for better, right? We're always looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think for us, if you can get away from, for Oregon is what I mean, if you can get to a place where we can get more possessions, that's more fun for spectators, but it's also more engaging for players, right? Especially on the girls' side. You know, like, if you want to grow the game, you know, make the game evolve to a place where it's constantly exciting. You know, what's engaging? Well, the pace of a game can be really exciting, not only to watch, but to participate in, right?
Yeah. I like it. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm curious,
I think Oregon has some really cool small town gyms. So as a smaller school coach, I'm curious, is there a gym that you just think is really cool that you think every coach should maybe go check out?
So, I we were lucky to have some updates to our gym recently, and it's always neat to modernize or make things a little more contemporary. You remove the old wood bleachers that were falling apart and get the more plastic-looking things, and you feel good about it. New stuff is cool, right? Man, mm-hmm. The first time I walked into Union High School's gym, it smelled like old hickory in there. Like, whatever that was. Like, I've never been in old hickory, but I can tell you, I bet it smelled like that. Old wood is the best. You walk in, and you're like, oh, there's been a lot of basketball that's been played in here. And you go and sit in their old original bleachers. That place has been rocking, and you can tell. Small town basketball is where it's at sometimes. And in these older wooden gyms, the sound is incredible too, right? Sometimes horrible, but that's what makes it fun, you know?
Right.
And you know, played in good games in that gym and some really competitive ones on both the boys and girls side, and you traveled over there a couple times. But that's a neat gym. It's not, I wouldn't know, I don't know what gym is my favorite high school gym, but that's got to rank up there. And I think it's part of it.
Yeah. I like it. What's the strangest thing you've ever seen in a basketball gym? It could be practice, game.
Speaking of Union, there was a game against Union where, at home, where it was pretty tight and the gym was rocking. And it's standing room only. I think they were the one seed and we were in state and we were trying to fight for a league position. The coach is trying to call a timeout and you can't hear a darn thing in there. So that coach runs out into the middle of the floor. The action is on the baseline on their side, but he runs out into the middle of the floor to call and try and call the timeout. Doesn't get any response and runs to the baseline in the middle of the floor to call the timeout. Yeah, that coach was me. That was my second year. And luckily for me, I didn't get teed up at that moment. I thought, I immediately regretted it. You know, like, oh, what have I done? Come on, you know? I know you get so wrapped up like we all do in certain situations. And I just remember walking back to the bench thinking, should I be putting my tail between my legs? Because this is not the example I need to be showing my players right now. But I also knew, like, we had to have the timeout, right? So, you know, and I think back at that moment, I was like, you know, you just in a few years you grow and you see some of the things you did and the way you acted early on in your coaching career and you go, you know what, experience is truly important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. How do you go about selecting team captain?
When I was before I took the head coaching job, whether it was for the guy's side or the girl's side, or even when I was playing, the common way to do it was to have your kids vote. And unfortunately, more often than not, I always saw this result where it did the opposite of selecting sometimes the best candidates for your leadership position. Because, you know, of course, it turns into a popularity contest. But it in my mind, sometimes that accentuates the fact that you're trying to get away from cliques that happen outside of the gym. You're trying to bring your kids together. Sometimes it can work just the opposite of that, right? So I tried a couple different models, and what I kept coming back to is, like, you know what? As a head coach, as a coaching staff, you're going to make a number of decisions that you didn't think were coming when you were a varsity assistant or a JV coach, or you just didn't think coming. But one of them is you got to make hard decisions on, you know, where you see your leadership coming from. So I just took that. You know, I'm not saying I was perfect, But by the time you get into late December, you know, if you don't know before then, and you write C's next to their names on the board, and they should know well before you do that, that they're the captain. So oftentimes it happens organically. Not saying it's perfect, but that is just one of those, you know what, if you're going to carry the clipboard, you know, wear the whistle, you're going to have to make tough choices. And I think that can sometimes be one of them. And again, not always right, I suppose, but you know, as a coach, who mm-hmm. your leaders are. And
right. That's
one of the things that I kind of carried with me.
Do you give your captains any specific roles or responsibilities?
So there's nothing on paper, but generally, I want them to be organizers and communicators. So on the communication front, they're the types of players that I can go to as a coach and the players can go to filter communication inside out, right? So there may be times where I'm as the head coach after a practice where I'm like, you know what, I'm not sure player A or B is really picking this up, or I think something's going on there. I think I see something. And so instead of speculating the whole time about it, I expect our leaders to be communicators as well. They can be good at that. Player to player, not just player to coach, right? And so I'll go to them initially. It won't be the last person I talk to, but I'll go to them and say, hey, I think I'm picking up on this. What do you see? And they'll tell me straight what they think the situation is. And sometimes it's, yeah, you know, she's been struggling with one thing or another, and you should probably know that, coach. Or sometimes it's just, no, I think you're overthinking it. You know, and if there's been more than a handful of times of that, I go up to a leader or one of our captains, and they'll be like, "No, I don't see that at all. I think she's doing okay, or maybe you're overthinking it like you usually do, coach." Oh, okay, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other part is organization. You know, I've had certain captains, that point guard that I was telling you about, when we were in mm-hmm. Coos Bay that Greg picked out. I had her organize when I had one singular message and I knew I needed it to get completed. I went to her with it. Like, hey, you're our organizer on this. And she would then dictate and she would get it done. It's just, that was her personality type and she'd be great at it. And it helps the coaching staff to, you know, take some of these tasks and make sure that your kids, it's part of buy-in too, interestingly enough, but making sure your kids are making it happen. You know, like, and little things like, hey, you know, let's say one of your captains happens to be a junior and you're about a week out from senior night. And, you know, you can give this task to one of your coaches to make sure that your juniors are all lined up and taken care of, say, presents and ceremony for senior night, right? Or you can make sure that your junior leader is engaged enough to do that. And oftentimes that helps create that ownership, you know? And so, you know, little things like that. I think, you know, on bus trips, you know, when, let's say we're getting off the bus, you want your leaders to say, to make sure that we've got our assignments done as far as equipment, things like that. It's little things like that, but it's important, you know?
Yeah.
Those things matter. If your best player is making sure the balls are coming off the bus and nothing's mm-hmm. getting left behind, that's huge.
Yeah. You know, is there a team bonding activity you put the girls through?
So my favorite activity is usually around team night, and that's usually our Christmas party. It's a tradition, of course. I'm sure most teams do
right.
something like that, you know. But there was one team bonding activity that we did about 4 years ago. And I didn't organize this. This is all on an assistant coach, and he did great.
Mm.
But he has a place just outside of town with a big full court on it. And we were going to have the kids come out and we did this after practice, so we didn't want to plan on it, but we wanted them to come out and hang out there for a little while, right? But before we did that, he had them on a scavenger hunt in groups put together of kids that would normally not hang out together, right? You're pairing freshmen with seniors, and you're pairing certain kids that you know, without being destructive, right, would probably benefit from hanging out with each other as far as developing chemistry on the floor, right? It would lead to that at least. But, yeah, we do a – he had a specific list. And, of course, everything we do is competitive. I'm sure all coaches are saying that, but for sure us. And we're throwing, hey, scavenger hunt, whoever wins this gets X prize, here you go. And so you'd have – I think we had 3 or 4 teams. Coach had it all organized. They had to do things like go talk to people, go ask questions, and it's all over town. And because it's a small community, you can kind of get away with this a little bit without getting kids in positions where they can get in trouble, you know. But, yeah, it's fun, you know. And so you do that, and then we met up at the coach's house, and we had s'mores, and we barbecued, and we had a big fire pit out there. And that stuff's fun. It's not basketball-related, but – can really bring some – we had little mini games too. Some really bring some things together. But one of our traditions that we did for all 8 years was always during team night / our Christmas party. And it's a competition called Egg Russian Roulette.
Mm.
So if you've he runs the Tonight Show now. He took over.
Yeah,
but
Jimmy Fallon, right?
So I saw one night my first year. I'm like, I don't know why, but we got to do that. So it's super simple, right? You have egg cartons in between two people, and you set up a bracket, and it's single elimination, but you know all the eggs between there, so there's 6 eggs between two people, and all of them are raw, or all of them are hard boiled except for one, right? Mm. So they'll take turns smashing the egg on their opponent's head, and so they'll bring this back and forth, and it gets super messy, and kids are laughing, and once you get to a champion, the last girl standing, then it's one on one with the head coach.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, and that's when it gets – that's that final twist of, okay, I get to smash an egg on the head coach's head, and this is going to be fun. This is going to be a blast. I'm going to – and it inevitably always turns into that player smashing the raw egg on my head, and it's all over me. And you know what? I'm not sure I've ever won. In fact, I don't think I have. I usually lose that, and – the whole house erupts with laughter at that point. And throughout the night on that, they kind of look forward to it. You know, they get their hair back in a ponytail, and coaches are making sure that they didn't wear their greatest clothes, you know, and they're like,
right,
towels everywhere, bags for all the eggs and stuff. And it's a blast.
Yeah.
Simple, but fun team activity. Kids are having a great time, you know, good times.
I love it. I love it. What's your favorite drill?
It may not be our kids' favorite drill all the time. My favorite drill, and most of my favorite drills, are the ones that incorporate a ton of different things, right? As long as it makes sense. And since we're a transition team, or at least we've tried to be, right, over these years, full court passing mechanics and communication are huge. And if you're going to be a transition team, you also got to play well with numbers, with advantage, about 3-on-2 or 2-on-1. So there's a drill that Bobby Hurley did years ago, and I actually took this from a coach I coached for, Coach Thompson. But it's a 3-lane passing drill we called Celtic passing. and you have different variations and different segments you add to it. But it's in its core, it's very simple. And at the beginning of the year, it looks like total crap. I mean, balls mm-hmm. bouncing all over the place. You can have the most experienced team you've had in years. And last year, let's say you got state runner-up. Man, you look great. You look crisp. It was fantastic. We get out and run this drill the first week in practice, and they'll be throwing basketballs behind their teammates, hit them right in the knees, and these can be all-state kids. And they're, just making critical errors because it's not a hard drill by itself, but in concept, if you haven't been doing it, you can tell, you know. Right. But it surely develops that full-court passing mentality. And so what at its essence, it's three different lines, right? One line on each sideline and then one underneath the basket. And so in the first segment, if you will, you pass off to your teammate. The ball doesn't hit the floor, right? So you pass off to your teammate on the right side, let's say. And then that pass comes back to the middle. Not that you would ever make this pass in a ball game. But
right, right.
The pass comes back to the middle, and the player on the opposite side is on a dead sprint and taking a 45-degree angle after half to the basket. And what you're looking for is that on the pass right over the top, you're talking three passes, right? Right at the basket, lay it in right there. You're trying to complete that thing in a certain amount of time, right? And it's all about timing and mechanics and communication, right? So you'll do that there and then back. And then, you know, the next two can be just simple passing back and forth. And you want to get to a place, by the end of December, where that kid in the middle is passing back to whether they're dribbling on the outside lanes or not, but their head is on a swivel and they're touching the basketball for half a second and getting rid of it. And by the time they turn their head and have their hands ready, a basketball should be hitting them right in the hands, right? Whether it's on the bounce or it's there. And again, sounds super simple, right? But it's not easy.
Right.
It builds a full court mentality while working on a sense of pace. And then as you get through the first few iterations of the first few segments, you'll go down one time and then you play 2-on-1 coming back. So you start getting that that play with numbers, that advantage, disadvantage. I'm not a three-man or a five-man weave guy. You never play weave in basketball, right? But I don't want to have drills where we're doing things we don't do in a game. But there are circumstances where a weave is a good warm-up, right? So in this drill, you can go from three lines to five, and you go with a simple five-man weave, two-foot jump stop, I mean, just over the top. You're going through all your mechanics. You're being vocal. Your hand's in the right spot. You know, your gym should be loud, right? And the ball should never hit the floor. So you go, your pass hits all five kids for a layup, and then it's 3-on-2 coming the other way. And if you can use both sides of the floor or both courts, if you have side courts, you can really get some interesting stuff there. You know, our numbers have been a little smaller lately, so we haven't been able to do that. But you can certainly pull that off. So that's a drill where you're getting ball handling, passing, and you're playing a little bit of basketball. You know?
Yeah. Love it. Well, Coach, I think that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me on. This is a neat opportunity, and I love hearing the podcast.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach McMullen, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach him up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.